And so then I was like, well, he's obviously gay. I mean, first of all, did you see him or talk to him?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk about Bill Maher's film Religious, and Molly shares the 3 pages of notes she made about the film. Nick and I also occasionally talk.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. As always, I am one of your hosts, Tim Wick. I am joined by Team Glover.
Yeah.
Molly and Nick Glover. My favoriteest co-hosts in the entire world.
Aww.
Aww. And this week, what we'd like to do
that, is...
Take that, Jenna.
Did you hear that, Molly? He said I was his favorite.
Damn it.
It was plural. All right. No, look. We gotta get out of the topic. We got stuff to talk about. We got a heavy topic this week. Well, not heavy. An important topic. We're gonna talk about the movie Religious.
Hell yeah.
Religious, yeah. Which I have up until recently pronounced Religious.
Like Caligula?
Well, no, because I think it sounds more like ridiculous, which is
right.
I know
what
it's religious.
But it's Religious.
It is.
Which is, if you haven't seen it, and probably most people listening to this podcast have seen it. It is a documentary by Bill Maher, about religion.
Yes, all of it.
All of it.
Yeah.
And Maher, I don't know, he never identifies as atheist in the film.
Yes,
I would
he
identify.
Does.
He does many times in the film.
See, I thought he said he didn't know.
No, he says he's an atheist who is 10% agnostic in the sense that you can't know for sure, but he's an atheist.
Okay, because he said I don't know a couple of times. So I felt like he was angling towards agnostic at certain points.
He is a militant anti-theist atheist.
Yes, definitely. He's definitely anti-theist. That is unquestionable based on the film. Now, Molly, you took copious notes.
I took 3 full fucking pages, like 8x10 pages of notes.
For this 30-minute podcast.
Yes,
we can just let you read your notes.
No, that's all right. That's all right. I'll read the funniest parts. I just want to say, like, I want to start at the end real quick because I realized... we'd only seen this once before.
Yeah.
And we watched it right when it came out. And I realized at the end of the movie, I was like, there's this call to arms at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
He says it's a call to arms.
Yeah.
And that this untapped majority of atheists and non-religious and anti-religious people needs to fucking start talking and stop letting these assholes take over and bully us into silence. And my note I have here is I'm wondering if watching that subconsciously led my brain's effort towards the more militant atheism and the more vocal anti-theism that I have today. I would say that before I watched this movie, I didn't strongly self-identify as atheist. I more identified as apatheist.
Yeah.
And it was, I really think that this movie did something to me and really struck a chord in me in a way that woke up a part of me that had always been there and was like, you know what, no, you're right, I'm not going to be quiet about it anymore.
So it's
interesting.
Watching it again, that segment of the film struck me in that I think about what we do with this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I think about what I do with a lot of blogging that I do and things like that, where it's like, I don't want to be an in your face fuck you all atheist, but I don't want to be unheard.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to be invisible. And I think watching that film, and I watched it when it first came out too,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't really out as an atheist at that time. And I don't
but
know
if that... But it clearly started something.
But it started something because I was like, you know, yeah, I have to talk about being an atheist. Because the statistic that he showed, we've talked about it before, but the statistic that he showed that really... really hit a chord with me was the idea that there are more atheists in the United States than there are Jews.
Or gay people.
Or
I think there was, he said also, there is another, like, big deal minority that has a lot of lobbying.
That has political power.
Yeah.
And atheists and nuns don't.
Yeah.
And part of it is that fear of just being counted.
Yeah.
And so...
I think, our lobbyist written down?
Yeah.
That's one of the... Yeah.
Yeah, when he's sitting and talking to a senator
mm-hmm.
who believes that the end times are coming.
Yeah. Yeah, the... God, where's the... Okay, so hold on. The senator... I have that as Ten Commandments politician asshole. All right, so when he says, can you think of anything else we still cling to from the Bronze Age?
Yeah.
And the guy is just gobsmacked. And it's like, it's true. And with no modern updates. And then he says, he asks the guy, do you believe in evolution? And the guy says... And he goes, clearly, the scientific communities are still divided on the specifics of evolution. And Bill Maher goes, no, they're not, actually.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah, they're not.
They're not divided at all on the specifics of it. It's pretty much we know what happened.
Not to no true Scotsman, but, like, if you're an actual scientist, you kind of believe in evolution.
Yeah. And just that idea of, like, when he said, I think faith is very important to politics, it's important to people and their politicians and all that, and it's just
faith
that
is important
but
to the religious.
Have any facts to back it
no.
up, right?
And
know, speaking as a liberal for a moment, as a liberal who primarily votes Democrat, you know, this the thing that's important about this guy is he's a Democrat, and a lot of times, speaking as a liberal, I think of the party that I vote for most of the time as being the quote reasonable party, but the fact is that most Democrats in power are just as religious as the Republicans in power.
Oh yeah,
or at least on the pretend face they are for sure.
Yeah, so there isn't anybody politically that represents our point of view, and so religious really spoke to that.
Yeah,
me. It was like, yeah, you're right. There isn't a voice for people who don't believe in God in this country.
The statistic he mentions at the end is the people who say they are absolutely unaffiliated with any religion and don't want to be in a religion and don't want to be, you know, near religion, bigger than Jews, blacks, homosexuals, or NRA members, lots of people that have lobbies.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. It's the great untapped minority. I would love a lobbyist. That would be amazing.
Well, I mean, there's like the Freedom from Religion Foundation. There are things like that. But you know, when you think about the power that the NRA has.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's money there. There aren't.
Nobody's tossing
there's
money.
There's no money in atheism.
There's not atheist industrial complex that's manufacturing whatever the atheist equivalent of a gun is, I guess.
Well, so like one of the things he says at the beginning of the movie is faith causes dissonance inside otherwise rational people, and how he's, and I think that was something that, I mean, I've said this before where it's like, I lose a little bit of respect for someone when I find out they truly and genuinely believe in God and in these infallible miracle type prayers and all that kind of stuff, because it is a cognitive dissonance. It's people who believe in other who are otherwise smart and capable and logical, and then they tell you that they genuinely believe that when they go to church on Sunday they are eating the body of a 2,000-year-old dead guy.
There's an ethical dissonance too, like it's that whole the atheist experience, Matt destroys a Christian thing.
Yeah,
the individuals have stronger morals, better moral code than their God.
Yeah,
yet.
And
yet we believe in God, and we believe that God is better than the rest of us and has a better moral code than the rest of us. But when you sit down and you start to parse out the moral code, definitely of at least the Christian God.
He asks the guy about, you know, the guy who says that he knows for a fact that God and Jesus exist because he would ask for miracles and they would happen. And the guy who says, like,
I stuck the cup up and asked for rain.
And asked for rain, and then it's like, how many times have you prayed for rain? And then it started raining in 10 seconds, and Bill Maher says, I've never prayed for rain.
Rain happens.
Rain happens. But so he asked that guy, you know, you believe in God, you believe in Jesus, yes. He goes, do you believe in Santa Claus? And the guy laughs. He goes, well, because that's ridiculous, right? Like a guy that can fly around the world and deliver presents and everything. He's like, but yet there's more logical evidence for Santa's existence than there is for Jesus. Presents show up under the tree.
There's a historical record of a guy.
Right. But no, to the point, more to the point where it's like, I mean, just to the individual.
Yeah.
Presents from Santa, like, so logically, and I was thinking to myself, that's what's interesting is there was more evidence to my mind that I believed in Santa until I was almost 15. I stopped believing in God when I was about 11. And it's funny to me because there was more logical evidence of Santa because my mom was doing it, but that doesn't matter. Like, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I think if she had never been caught, I mean, I don't know that I would have ever stopped believing. If she just kept going, I mean, and so, you know, she used to do this thing, a lot of these, but one of them was the Care Bears. Like, we had a mailbox on the side of our house, like a defunct old mailbox that we didn't use. She said it was the Care Bears mailbox. Write a letter to the Care Bears and put it in there, and the Care Bears wrote back in sidewalk chalk on our driveway every time. And I realized, I'm thinking, that's a miracle. If right. I didn't know better, that yeah. would, that's a miracle. I asked the Care Bears to write me back, and they did. So it's so interesting, this idea that people would accept it with less evidence than I believed in the Care Bears. And they are willing to, like, die for this cause.
Yeah. And die and lobby.
And kill.
And kill and affect other people's mm-hmm. lives for...
Beat their children and all of it,
there,
yep.
There was a part where he said, someone said... like, well, imagine what you could do if you turned all that energy and all that drive to God. Like mm-hmm. just imagine what you could accomplish if you were that devoted to God. And mm-hmm. and they're sometimes the little cut to something funny things that they do in the documentary are, like, cheesy and kind of distracting. But on that one, they happened to cut to a car bomb exploding.
Yeah.
And it was like, just imagine if you were that dedicated, but to God,
yeah.
if you were willing to throw your life on the line and give everything for God, imagine what you could accomplish.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
that is
yeah.
an example of that.
Yeah.
That's a great example.
When he was in the trucker church, and
oh, man.
He said, and the one guy was like, well, because he was like, okay, so virgin birth. You guys really believe virgin birth, like, that's not in the Bible anywhere. So why, you know, in the, it's not in the Old Testament, or it's not even, I mean, it's in the New Testament and stuff. So why wouldn't they have mentioned that, you know, or whatever? And the guy's like,
it's not in all the Gospels.
It's not in all, that's what it is.
It's not mentioned.
Most of the Gospels, they right. don't even, they talk about Jesus, they never mention he was born of a virgin.
Right.
Yeah.
And this guy says, well, they found that Shroud of Turin and they did blood testing to it and they found out that the blood on it was from someone who had somehow both male and female.
It was male DNA, but it was female blood. And the only way they could do that is if...
Yeah. That never happened.
And the guy says, I don't know what... I mean, I don't know all of it. I didn't really pay a lot of attention to it. It's like, so they found evidence of your Lord? And you didn't pay that much attention to the article?
That would be the most fucking important thing ever.
And then when they were like, well, there's historical proof that Jesus existed. And Bill Maher's like, there's not actually. And they were all like, what?
He's
like,
what do you call the Bible?
There's not. I mean, there's not. There isn't.
There's several hand removed accounts.
Yeah.
But that in that same, the trucker church, man, there's that you were saying, like, a logical person, and then all of a sudden they have this one thing that they're fucking insane about, and mm-hmm. it's religion. There was that one guy in the back of the church, in the trucker church, and all of a sudden. That guy realizes that Bill Maher is not a Christian and he's not there to interview them about that. And he's there to interview them to ask questions. I feel like he was polite and for the most part, well-behaved. Yeah. But that guy was like, I don't like where these questions are going. I ain't going to have none of this. And he marched out.
I respect that guy, actually.
But you know what? If your faith isn't strong enough to stand up to someone just asking you questions, how strong is your faith?
I mean, there are some times when I think Maher is kind of a dick.
Well, yeah.
Of course he's a dick.
The Jesus Land place, he was kind of a dick.
Even the ex-gay guy, and most
he was kind of an ass to him.
The ex-gay guy kind of deserves it because gay conversion is bullshit.
Oh, my God.
But at the same time, the questions that Maher's asking are all gotcha questions, where it's like,
sure.
I'm going to ask a question, then I'm going to film this guy's reaction because he's going to look stupid.
Well,
because the question that I asked, nobody could do anything
but
look stupid at this moment.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
There was a part with that guy. He says, you know, well, you're ex-gay and blah, blah, blah. And the guy goes, no, I'm not ex-gay because no one's gay. I just dealt with some homosexuality. That sounds like someone sounds like someone who, like, pimps out gay people, like dealing some homosexuality.
Yeah, that guy does not believe in, he believes in gay sin. He doesn't believe that anyone is actually gay, that they are just dabbling in the sin of being gay. Yeah.
Rachel Maddow, and I should link to this in the show notes, she recently had somebody who's like a gay, anti-gay therapist, you know, curing gay people, and holy fuck, did she just rake him over the coals. She just was not
bullshit. It's officially bullshit.
Well, and to her, she's an out lesbian, you know, how offensive is it? how offensive is it to have somebody come out with these books? Yeah. And of course, he says he's a therapist, and so she mentions several times, I want to make it really clear, you're not licensed by anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not licensed by anybody. The guy says, well, I am a psychotherapist. She says, no, you're not licensed by anybody.
That word has a meaning, and it means not you.
I want to, so that just because he talks about a bunch of religions, and I want to make sure we get to all of them.
Yeah, we never on Christianity.
Because, so, one thing, let's see here, the guy that said that well, first of all, the rich guy, the wealthy televangelist preacher dude.
I've got your salvation, and I have it on DVD.
The dude that was like, no, Jesus wore fine linen robes.
Yeah, yeah.
He was given gold at birth. Like, he had all kinds of gifts.
He compares the pageantry to rock stars and like priests to like...
All I want to say is fuck that guy. But like, more specifically, talking about the money thing. So the Creation Museum. Right?
Yeah.
$27 million fucking dollars.
Yeah.
How many people
would that renovation?
How many people would that have fed?
I'm serious. I want us to take a field trip to the Creation Museum.
But seriously, how many people would that have fed? And then also the Holy Land experience. Same question. How many people would that have fed? And the like the whole like the Jesus business, you know, like that guy's in that they when they interview Jesus guy, and saying, you know, he was like asking him, well, Belmar is like, how do you explain that like Krishna and all the Krishna myths that line up with the Jesus stuff and Mithras and all the and then Horus, because again, you know, son of God, born on the 25th, you know, resurrected, virgin birth,
dead for three days, discovered by two women.
This is interesting, and I looked this up on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I looked this movie up on Wikipedia, and it's interesting because you read about the whole movie, and then there's a little segment down at the bottom that basically, and it's clearly, it was stuck in there by a fundamentalist,
mm-hmm.
and it's something about the Horus myth, and it says that some Christian scholar had given the Horus myth to 20 different Egyptologists, or the Jesus thing to 20 different Egyptologists, and all the Egyptologists said, there's no match with Horus whatsoever. But the interesting thing about it is, there's no link, there's no citation. It's just clearly fundamentalist editor managed to get that thing shut. Well, that should be removed from Wikipedia.
Needs a citation.
We'll take care of that. Yeah. But so, when he asks him all...
I'm going to link to it in the show notes, because you got to see it.
So when he asks him all that, the guy says, oh, I don't go by the accuracy of all that. I go by the accuracy of the Bible. And it's like, I don't go by the accuracy of texts older than the Bible or myths older than the Bible. I go by the Bible. Well, so you go by the newer thing. So why are we not going by the newer thing now, which is science and not the Bible?
Or heck, why aren't you going by the Quran? Because that's newer than the Bible.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or
also,
why don't we go by the Book of Mormon, which is even newer than that?
So apparently they do a parade at the Holy Land, it seems. It's the Passion Play. It's the 12 stages of the cross.
Yeah.
And that seems to be what they do instead of the, you know, like, remember the magic. Like, it's instead. And am I the only one who doesn't see the irony in people applauding and taking photos while Jesus is scourged and whipped and walks along
like
and no one helps him? They just stand by and let it happen over and over, like every day.
It's like
I just like really no one is like.
All I can think of is when the Hunger Games movie came out. The previous guest we had on, Bob Alberti, said, you know, when you go watch Hunger Games, just remember, you and I aren't Katniss and Peter. Peter, we're the ones in the audience
in the
funny hair and all that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, just remember, when you go to Jesus Land and you're taking pictures of Jesus being whipped and like marching through,
you're the Romans.
Yeah.
I don't know you. Like, that's it.
Yep.
So I want to talk, just, they don't go into, the Jewish stuff is really brief, and I wanted to...
That rabbi is such a fucking dick.
Yeah, he's pretty easy on the Jews.
I wish he had found someone else other than that rabbi who was, hey, let me finish, oh wait, hang on, I gotta complete my thought.
The reason I think that was shorter or easy on him was that was the one interview he walked out of.
Yeah.
Bill Maher. That was the one interview where he was like, no, I'm fucking done. And he's like, I'm just not.
But
I'm done.
He didn't go talk to any like Orthodox,
no.
super ultra Orthodox
I don't think they
Jews
would talk to him.
He talked to the Jewish rabbi who is a Holocaust denier who doesn't believe in the state of Israel.
Anti-Zionist.
Who's friends with,
he talked to the Orthodox guy that invented all those hilarious Shabbat like devices that become the Shabbos Goy for you. And like, which I think is so funny because it's like, they said, like, don't you think this is wrong that you're, exploiting these loopholes. And he said, well, God made the laws, so God made the loopholes. And it's
God,
like,
God intended, God must have intended for us to exploit these loopholes, otherwise he would have made more perfect rules.
What I wrote here was, derp, or God had no idea about phones.
it's just the idea that dialing a phone is doing work.
Yes.
You know, the extreme level of adherence to a bizarre rule.
Yeah.
And is crazy, and the fact that these...
A bizarre rule that can, like, cause the loss of life and shit, like...
Yeah.
I just...
It's like blood transfusions for... Was it Christian Scientists that don't
know? Jehovah's Witnesses.
JWs, right.
Probably
yeah,
Christian
like,
Scientists, too, like, it's like if, science.
That blows my mind that your faith could override your preservation instinct like that.
I have two things written down for Mormons. The first one is... They baptized the dead people, yeah. Right? And they baptized both Anne Frank and Hitler.
That's going to be awkward.
I hope those guys aren't in the same house.
That just confuses me because it's just like, I don't understand why. I mean, I could understand one or the other, I guess, but I don't understand both
at all. So when Anne and Adolf are in Kelob or whatever it is, and they're in there, they get their own Mormon paradise planet. They're gonna be walking down the street from the grocery store and they're gonna pass each other and it'll be the most awkward thing that's ever happened in existence.
It's Kolob, which is an anagram of Kobol, which is the planet in Battlestar Galactica.
That's intentional.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's all I really wanted to ask.
It's intentional.
Yeah. I mean,
Ron Moore.
Mar does a great job. The biggest problem with the movie, I guess, is that he's not going to be able to convince anybody who isn't, who's locked into it.
And no.
A lot of
people are on the fence.
I don't think
my mom was on the fence until she saw this movie, and this movie really convinced her that religion is harmful. She's still a theist, but she genuinely believes now that religion is harmful.
Yeah.
Which...
That's beneficial. Something. That's a step in the right direction.
We're not going to be able to keep people from believing in a higher power or whatever they want. But if we can keep people from believing that blind allegiance to the dogma of man, in the name of God is a bad thing, I would love that one of the things that things he says is how since they say that people have these spaces, you want to call it a God-shaped hole or whatever, those spaces,
the God-shaped hole space.
But he's like, the thing is, since there are no, when people are beseeching and they're, they need answers and they're, cause they're humans and they ask why. And since there are no gods to fill those answers, there are no gods to fill those spaces, there are people who do it. And people are full of flaws and evil and agendas, and they are inherently
untrustworthy.
Man,
I actually want to read a quote.
Okay.
Roger Ebert wrote a review of Religious, and Roger Ebert is an atheist. He's mentioned it on several occasions, but he's very careful in his reviews.
This
one, he's like, I'm not going to talk about religion. I'm just going to talk about the movie.
Okay.
And he liked it, but what I love is at the end, he does talk about religion in a really backhanded, brilliant way.
All right.
And this is the last paragraph. I just need to read it. I have done my job and described the movie. I report faithfully that I laughed frequently. You may very well hate it, but at least you've been informed. Perhaps you can enjoy the material about other religions and tune out when yours is being discussed. That's only human nature. And I love that last two sentences because what's he basically saying? He's saying, oh, by the way, if you watch this and you think it's really funny when he's making fun of the Muslims and you're pissed when he's making fun of the Christians, I wonder what the Muslims are thinking when they're watching this movie.
And see, now okay, so I know that I'm talking a lot and I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, that's all right. You've got the three pages of notes.
A few points I want to make that I'm noticing about everything. And so, as Nick has said before, we've talked about the Torah, the Quran, and the Bible. Those are all desert survival guides.
Yeah,
all the laws and the rules that are set down in that are mostly about survival
in
the desert.
Preservation of your tribe and your people.
Now, if you add to the Book of Mormon and Scientology, and now you add those five together, those are all focused on the propagation of your kind, which is the right kind. You don't sleep with, you don't, you know, that's why no homosexuality. That's why, you know, like you stay with your wife. That's why, you know, you don't use birth control, because there were only like 7,000 of them in the whole world, and they lived in the desert and it was hard and they needed to fuck a lot and make babies and not have sex with dudes. Like, I mean, it's, and then so there is, so apologists and revisionists on all sides. There's people on the in the Muslim and in the Jewish and in the Christian that he talks about who are saying things like, I don't interpret those passages as mattering. Those are in the context of their time. He asks a Muslim woman about, how do you feel about all this anti-gay stuff and all the anti-woman stuff? And she's like, that's not important.
That's not the part I focus on.
That's not what I focus on. Or you ask someone who's like a Christian maybe, and you ask them about stuff in the Old Testament, the brutal stuff. And they're like, well, that's not...
I'm a Christian. I'm a New Testament Christian.
And so it's this apology revisionist thing. And so, like, in the Quran, it's anti-gay. It's anti-women. But people will, you know, and in the Bible, you know, there's the whole ridiculous mythos in the first place. Like, the Leviticus stuff. The other assorted bullshit is what I have written down. It's like... And so it makes me think of... Chris Rock has this bit in one of his... In Never Scared, where he talks about, like, seeing women dancing to this, like, horrible shit. This rap music that is just so awful.
Slap her on the ass. Like, slap her on the ass.
Like, hit the... Like, a slap bitch in the face with my dick. Slap her with my dick. Like, poke the bitch in the eye. Like, you know, piss on the bitch. And he's like, there's, like, women, like, just dancing. And you can ask them, like, how can you dance to that? And they go, well, he ain't talking about me. And that's all I could think of with this religious stuff. It's like, well, yeah. I mean, like, yeah, they said all that. It's okay to rape kids, but not...
That's not my interpretation of the word.
The story of Lot, or I forgot the story of Lot, but like that, it's two angels come to Sodom and Gomorrah, and people start trying to rape the angels, and Lot says, "Rape my kids, please."
Yeah, take my daughters and rape them.
Like, don't rape those angels. Instead, rape my kids.
And he's rewarded for not letting the angels get raped.
How about let's not rape anyone, man?
How about the angels are fucking angels? Are they not powerful enough to not get raped by a mob?
Fly away or something?
Or use their angelic cherubim?
Well, no, Lot had to prove that he was a good man by giving the mob his daughter.
Does someone need to be raped to prove you're a good man?
Well, yeah, apparently. His property just had to, you know, he was...
There are so many messed up stories in the Bible. And you're like, you know, if you're going to take this whole book, if you're going to say this... thump is what I believe in.
And
you have to either take the whole fucking thing or stop cherry picking.
Yeah, a guy says that. He says you cannot hesitate. You have to believe every word in the story. A Muslim guy says that about the Quran.
Yep.
Yeah.
And because he asks, Bill Maher asks him, because he's talking about, you know, kneeling and facing Kaaba and praying to Mecca and all that and every time. And he's like, does it matter? Because he's like, it's a stone from God. Yeah. It fell from God. You look in the whole desert, nothing like this.
There's no black stone. That's a black stone.
And he's like, we know it's a meteor, though. Like, we know it's a meteor. So does it matter that we know what it is now? That now we know what meteors are and we understand? And he's like, it doesn't matter. It's from God.
Yeah.
And, the sometimes you kneel, sometimes you fast, and sometimes you go up on the hill and you cut the grass around the giant space penis. It's all the same.
It is all the same that you just make these arbitrary decisions. And I think the problem with fundamentalism is, you know, somebody like Ken Ham, who fucking creeps me out, believes in the literal interpretation of every passage in the Bible to the point that you can sit there and you can say, but this one doesn't make sense. And he'll be like, well, sure it does, because it's God. And
because God.
Yeah.
Sure.
But still, I come back to, if you're going to say parts of the Bible are true and other parts aren't, well, then all you're doing is really cherry picking. I used to think that in the sense that when I was more of a Christian, when I was still not sure what I believed, I always said, you know, well, you know, the Bible maybe comes from God, but it's more of a treasure hunt than it is a roadmap. It's more of a, you got to look through it and you got to find the parts that are right, and God is testing you. But I mean, what a stupid fucking thing to believe.
Well, if you believe that, then if people say, well, like, oh, how do you have ethics? How do you have morals if you're not religious? If you're an atheist, how do you know what's right and wrong? It's like, Well, how do you know it's right and wrong? How do you know which parts to keep and which parts to throw away? You're making that call.
Why is it that you aren't giving your daughters to a mob to be raped?
I feel like the arrogance of saying that you can decide what parts of the word of your God are the ones you should listen to and the ones you shouldn't is insane.
Yeah. It's incredible.
But
it's equally insane to accept it all at face value.
And the thing is, so it's the whole... Maybe more so. One thing he talks about that is how do we define crazy? And that religion is a mass delusion. It's a group hysteria in that sense, because if there was one person telling you the stuff in the Bible, like if there was just one guy,
when he stands in front of the White House and he starts talking about Scientology.
That's in England, I think.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay, sorry.
But the idea that like if you just had a friend who was talking about talking snakes and ribs turning into women and, you know, guy living in a big fish and all that stuff, like, you'd be worried about that friend. And so it's like, you know, what's the difference between the son of Sam and Abraham? People who heard voices from God telling them to murder and testing them and their faith. And it's just this really interesting thing to me that there's that. And then on top of it, I noticed people in every religious stripe were ducking questions about omnipotence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. A perfect God making an imperfect book and all that. So the big fish part, that the Jew for Jesus guy that he's talking to, he's like, well, you know, what about the story of Jonah? And he lived in that whale for 3 days. And the guy goes, excuse me, it was a big fish.
A big fish.
And he's like, oh, right, I'm sorry. I got hung up on the whale part. It was a big fish. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I was obsessing about it being a whale. Oh, yeah. my bad.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't a mammal. We could probably talk about this movie for the...
Oh, yeah.
As long as the movie lasted, we should probably move on to our 5 questions.
All right.
Yeah, some answers from the greatest untapped minority.
Yeah. Yes.
Our answers come... Now, just so you guys know, we're in early November now, so constant listeners, if you've turned in your 5 questions, we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting through them.
They come to us from Paul Perry, who is in the UK...
Awesome. Sheffield. He's from Sheffield, according to his Facebook page.
He's been listening since the beginning. He found us in the Miro feed, Nick.
Miro is... there's like a podcast directory that when we first started...
Is that what it is?
I put our podcast in a whole bunch of directories.
Awesome.
So that people could find us and
that's
stuff.
Awesome.
And I can't believe it fucking worked.
That's so cool.
Payoff.
Thanks for finding us there, Paul.
Yeah.
Great.
And I hope you're still listening now and you hear us. So, you know, I do have to say, you know, some of you folks that are from like a long way away, when we read your answers on the air, totally comment. Let us know that you heard it.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that you actually stuck around long enough to get your answers. So, question number one, what is the best movie that Paul had seen in the last 30 days back in November?
Creation, the film about Darwin writing On the Origin of Species with Paul Bettany and Jennifer Connelly. Superb drama showing Darwin struggling to reconcile the evidence of his findings with his wife's continued faith and the death of his daughter. I believe it didn't get a theatrical release as no distributor would touch it.
I didn't know such a movie existed.
I had never heard of it until I read
these answers. I did
know
such a movie existed, and I haven't seen it. And I kind of hope it's streaming on Netflix or something.
Yeah, we can do that.
So
that sounds. That
it.
What's
sounds
it called? One more time.
Creation.
Creation.
Ironically,
maybe that's a good topic for a future in-depth movie article that might not get us quite as riled up as this one.
Hey.
So, question number two, Nick.
Number two is: Who's your favorite atheist character?
Cara Avon from Blake 7.
Yeah!
One of the all-time great sci-fi shows, one I grew up watching. If you're not familiar, please watch it, but please forgive the dodgy sets and the special effects.
Oh, please. It's no worse than Doctor Who.
Yeah, we just talked about
Doctor
Who.
This was made by
the
BBC in the late 70s, early 80s. It was a major influence on Firefly.
For sure.
Avon is one of the great bad good guys.
Yeah.
He is a brilliant mathematician and charming borderline sociopath. His reasons for being part of the resistance against the Federation are complex, but usually boil down to self-interest and revenge. In cases where he seems to redeem himself and act selflessly, there is always an ulterior motive. And yet, his wit, charm, and intelligence make him a wonderful character, similar to Hannibal Lecter, although Avon would consider Lecter's bloodlust quite pathetic.
He believes in nothing
but himself. I know, hardly a role model, but a great character.
Sorry. He kind of reminds me of the Doctor in Lost in Space. A little bit. Blake 7 is like, if the Federation in Star Trek was bad and corrupt, and there was a little group of rebels who have been made out to be terrorists fighting against them, and they
so
waged...
Blake 7 is like the Maquis.
Yes. Yeah. Except
for fans out there.
Yeah. Except for they're totally fucking terrorists. Like they're like bombing. They're like, well, we found this plant here where they're making weapons. Let's go fucking blow it up.
Interesting.
And like they do. It's great. And the end is.
The description sounds a lot like Gaius Baltar from Battlestar to me.
Kind of, yeah,
like,
yeah.
The whole, like, you know, his interests usually boil down to self-interest and revenge, like, and all that.
That's because atheists don't have any moral compass.
He's an intriguing character, that's for sure.
All right.
Question number 3. What is your geekiest hobby?
Sadly straightforward, tabletop RPG addiction. I'm part of a long-standing group and GM Shadowrun, The Laundry, Alternity, Victoriana, CJ Carella's Witchcraft and Armageddon, Underground, Serenity.
Mm.
But I'm also a writer and tinkerer and a firm believer that the rules are guidelines and should be amended or thrown out if needed, especially as proofreading is an alien concept to most RPG publishers. I also tend to throw out backgrounds and settings, so I use Alternity, one of the finest RPG systems ever devised, with the OGL sourcebooks for Jeremiah and Farscape, D&D being, I'm sorry, one of the worst systems ever devised, despite that being where I began almost 30 years ago. My witchcraft owes more to Witchblade and Charles DeLint novels, and I can't read a book without finding some idea, concept, or character to fit into a campaign or universe.
Hell yeah.
I am super excited by this answer, and I would love to know if you get a chance to play the Star Wars RPG, I would love to know what you think of it.
The dice system is fucking cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like it.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't been able to play really RPG since the kids were born, which sucks.
I always wanted to play an RPG and have never been able to.
What? You don't get to?
I have never been able to. No one will let me join their group. No one wants a new person who's never played before. No one will start a group with me.
Yeah, my group is like a boys' night thing, and we haven't played in like a year and a half.
But in high school, I would ask to join. They would tell me no because I was a girl. In college, no one I knew played. And
you know what? We'll do it. We'll have a party. We'll have a D&D party.
I almost was able to join the all-ladies FFG Star Wars RPG, but then I couldn't because I was going to be in New York for, like, the two first character creation and start days. And
they ended up playing something lame anyway.
Yeah, they ended up not doing Star Wars. They ended up doing Dresden Files RPG.
Which we don't read those books, so we don't.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
I miss RPGs.
Our fourth question, what is your favorite sandwich?
All right. In my hometown of Sheffield, there is a little bagel bar called QC's on an alleyway in the city center. As well as all the standard bagels, it has its own specials named for Sheffield landmarks. River Sheaf, Ponds Forge, Winter Gardens, Town Hall, and my favorite, the Cathedral. Cream cheese, pastrami, guacamole, and salsa. I usually have it on a toasted onion bagel. Heavenly.
Huh.
Okay, I approve of all of
pastrami,
that.
Pastrami, guacamole, and salsa has me very interested. It's a combination I find interesting. Weird.
You're talking about avocados.
And I like it that the atheist's favorite is the cathedral. It appeals to me in some sense.
Yes.
It's irony points.
Okay, last question. What's the stupidest thing somebody has ever said to you about your atheism?
All right, so we have two answers. The first one is long and bitter. The second one is short and confusing. Which would you like first?
Long and bitter.
Long and bitter.
We've been long and bitter already.
When my son was born, my partner and I agreed we wouldn't have him baptized. Standard for her family, but a first for mine, which is Irish Catholic on one side and Welsh Methodist the other. My dad kept bringing it up, quite low-key at first, just saying he thought it was the right thing to do. I say if Michael chose to be baptized when he grew up, if that was his call, although I'd probably feel I failed, but gave my dad a bit of slack as part of it was we'd only recently lost my mom and it was experiencing a renewal of his Catholicism. Then one day my dad dropped what he obviously thought was the ultimate bombshell. We don't like to think about it, Paul, but what if the worst happened and Michael was hit by a car or something? I know you don't believe, but wouldn't you prefer to be on the safe side in case you're wrong?
Pascal's wager.
I don't think I've ever been so angry in my life, that cold, clear fury that burns everything away. I couldn't believe that he'd try that sort of emotional blackmail. When I could speak, I told him that if he worshipped the kind of God that would condemn a child to eternal torment because his parents had refused to sprinkle water on its head, his God could go and get fucked. Oddly, he never brought up the matter again. By the way, Michael is now almost 21, a thoughtful, honest, and moral atheist and free thinker who is preparing to go and study chemistry at Edinburgh University, and I couldn't be more proud of him.
Awesome.
And you know what? He can still get baptized if he wants.
He can still get hit by a car.
Yeah.
But true.
So here's short and confusing. Right. I decided I didn't believe in God when I was about 10 or 11. Or rather, at first, that I didn't care whether God existed because it couldn't possibly make any difference to how I behaved, which quickly became active disbelief. When I told people, usually relatives, a common response was, "It's sad to be so cynical at your age," which I didn't think to question until I was much older. What exactly is cynical about not believing in a God? I wonder if any of you have had that experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have the idea when people say like, "Oh, it's cynical to not want you don't want to believe in heaven." Of course, I want to believe in heaven.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Like I said, I believe in animal heaven. I know it doesn't really exist, but I mean, like I just
you like to think about it. It's, yeah, I mean, it's a happier alternative. Yeah. Absolutely, I've heard that. Like you don't have to be so down on everything. Like, oh, you don't believe in God. Like that's so depressing. That's not depressing to me. It's depressing to you because it makes you think that your eventual outcome is possibly not true, and I mean it's depressing to you that I'm not believing. It's not depressing to me.
Right. Yeah. I'm not depressed by what I believe.
No.
I don't know. I don't know where I'm going.
I know. This is stuff that we've talked about before. But sure. Basically, the short answer, Paul, yes. Yes, yeah. We have experienced that.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Paul Perry from the UK. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
That was wonderful.
That's great. We are hearing from all over the world. It's
I love that.
Exciting.
I know. You can send your answers into 5questions@geeksaloudgod.com. You should do it.
All right. Before we go, I have one shout out. This episode is airing a few days before the next performance of Big Fun Radio Fun Time. If you are in the Twin Cities, it is a radio show that I am producing and writing and performing in, taking place at the Bryant Lake Bowl, 10 p.m. on March 8th. That is our second show. If you can't be there, if you're one of the fine folks like Paul, who's listening in from the UK, you can go to fearlesscomedyproductions.com, and there is a handy little link to download the episodes that we've only got one episode so far, but you can download it. It is free to download, but you can also contribute something. If you contribute something, it's going to help pay for more equipment for the performance. And I was really proud of the first show. So
it went really well. And I would recommend that if you are going to come, you're going to want to either buy tickets in advance by calling the Bryant Lake Bowl or show up pretty early. Show up around 9 so that you can get in line to get in because you want to be able to get a good seat.
For sure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a fun show to watch, not just to hear.
Yes. But if you can't watch it, please do go listen to it.
Yep.
And I welcome your feedback on the show. I often say that I would love to hear your feedback on what worked and what didn't, because this is a brand new thing for me.
Our sixth question will be, what critiques do you have for Tim about his work?
Can we just leave it at what critiques you have for Tim? Because I will re-answer our 5 questions every day.
Asshole atheist over here.
Oh.
No, that's just an atheist, is an asshole over here.
All right, well, thanks so much for listening. We will catch you next week.
Watch Religious.
Thanks to Tim Wick and Jeffrey Brown for our theme song, Geeks Without God.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and look at past podcasts at www.geekswithoutgod.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter @geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
Geeks without God.
Oh, Scientology, you daft prick.